Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello there, and a very warm welcome into Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio. You can first catch the programme every Tuesday at 1 p.m, or if you miss that, we're around again on a Thursday evening at 9 p.m. Or if you prefer a podcast, well, that drops each Friday from your podcast provider of choice. Tech Talk, of course, it's your show where we get together each week to talk about the world of technology, what's accessible, what's inaccessible, and what's somewhere in between. We're always keen to hear from you. Why not drop us a line? That email address, as always, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, techtalk at rnib.org.uk. You can send us a good old-fashioned email, or how about you press the record button and let us hear your voice. We're always keen to get listeners on air, so do get in touch, and we look forward to that. Now, coming up this week on the programme, we're going to be talking about Be My AI, which will be a new service available through the Be My Eyes app. Hubert will be along telling us everything we need to know about Windows Narrator. And we'll be hearing about accessibility from the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. So stay tuned. It's another Tech Talk. Welcome in to our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavalkovich. Gentlemen, how are you?
Very good. How are you, Dave?
Yes, I'm good. Callum, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I'm doing good. How was your week off?
My week off. Yes, I know. Yeah. I might have popped into work at some point during that week off. You know, I had a very good, week actually. We did a bit of travelling about on the trains, and I don't know if I've mentioned this before. You know the refurbed Avanti Pendolinos. They've got Braille seat numbers on the edges of the seats.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
I think it's a nice touch. See what I did there. So anyway, moving on from my terrible dad jokes. Technology then. What's on your technology radar this week, Hubert? Let's come to you first.
I was reading about this. It's a topic I don't often explore, but I thought I'll read up on the tech news. And I was reading about an app which has been developed by university students, which can take a selfie and use a combination of various technologies, including AI, to recognize different eye conditions. I found this article on Cool Blind Tech, which I thought was quite interesting to see kind of AI be put in a positive light, because it has received some negative press recently, and I think it's good to talk about the benefits of what it can bring.
So who's that for, Hubert? Is that meant to be like a diagnostic thing, or surely it's not kind of medical grade, right?
Absolutely not. It's more to kind of give you a guideline to kind of say, look, you might be suffering from this condition. You might want to go and seek medical advice. At no point this is taken as a medical diagnosis. This is more of a kind of, like most of these health apps are, they kind of say, look, you might want to get this looked at by a medical professional. You know, it's by no means a replacement for a medical professional of any kind.
And do you have a sense of like how reliable is it? You know, I mean, can it tell the difference between, I don't know, somebody who's just had too much coffee or alcohol or something versus an actual eye condition?
I believe so. There's not much information on it on the article, but it can spot certain eye conditions such as glaucoma or diabetic retinopathy. So there are a few eye conditions it can spot. It's still early days, but it's something in the pipeline that I thought would be interesting to share.
Yeah, I have to admit, I am a little bit sceptical. I think if you've got any concerns about your eyesight, then you should definitely speak to your doctor. Callum Stoneman, then, what have you got for us?
I think it's going to be all about AI this week, pretty much, because that's been on my radar this week as well, once again, because we've had the news from Be My AI, which I think we're going to get into, about the beta places opening up. So, I mean, by the time we hear this, I might actually have the Be My AI virtual volunteer service, but I don't have it right now. But what I've been trying out in the meantime, Microsoft Bing have added image search to their kind of interface of ChatGPT. And I think I've said this before, Bing has been my favorite way to use ChatGPT, because you get the kind of conversationalness of ChatGPT, but also backed up by the internet. you know, so it can search the internet as well and provide references and things like that. And this is the closest I've seen, I think, to Be My AI. And this is available for everyone, I think, as long as you've got a Microsoft account. It is literally just like Be My AI. You can attach an image and then you can say, can you please describe this image? Or can you describe the colours of this t-shirt or something like that? And it's really accurate. I don't know how it's going to differ, because obviously Be My AI was designed for blind people, whereas this, you know, this isn't. So I imagine we'll get more useful and more accurate information from the Be My Eyes one, but this has been a nice little in-between. Been fun to play with, at least.
Yeah, well, we'll certainly keep track of that, and do let us know how you get on. I guess for me, the thing that's been on my mind is the accessibility of technology in the workplace. There's been a discussion recently about whether or not employers should mention whether their systems are going to be fully accessible with screen readers. I don't know if either of you have been following this one. There was a RNIB advert for a role where it was mentioned that you know, some of the systems or one of the systems may not work perfectly with the screen reader, so you might need a support worker in that situation. And I suppose the intention there was about transparency, not to discourage anyone from applying. I mean, Callum, you're working for a big commercial company. I think we've mentioned on the program, you know, before. How do you find the systems at work in terms of accessibility?
They're not too bad. We use a software called Jira, which is a kind of support and tracking software. So we can, if we've got an accessibility problem, then we can raise a ticket in Jira and we can see who it's been assigned to, and we can set priorities and we can see where it's up to. So it's kind of a ticketing system to keep track of your work. And that is not inaccessible as such, but that's the most inaccessible one that I've found. There's a lot of issues with it. There's a lot of keyboard shortcuts that don't actually work because they interfere with the screen reader ones. There's a lot of really clunky navigation. It's one of them ones where you could be halfway through editing, like, say, a comment or a description, and then suddenly something pops up and it jumps you out, and then even though what you were working on is there, you can't access it again. And I don't have a support worker or anything, so the way I tend to get around it is either asking a colleague to help me out, you know, and sending them what I've got so far and they can make the changes, or sharing my screen and giving them control of my system via Teams, you know, so they can just get me out of that situation. And it's interesting because, yeah, I have seen this discussion, and obviously I get the transparency point, but then someone made a really good comment, which was that sometimes organisations have no choice. This is the best, and this is the case with BT as well. Jira is the best fit for what we need. It's the best way to manage our work, but unfortunately it's not accessible. So, you know, what do you do? And in my case, you've got to accept that I'm a minority at BT, so they're going to go with the thing that helps the, you know, 100,000 people, or however many people we've got working for us, do the best job that they can.
Mm. And I suppose, you know, a support worker is only ever really a stopgap. And the thing we really have to do is advocacy with the developers and providers of these products. Hubert, any thoughts on this?
I think transparency is important. I think it's good to know that if you're coming to a job, what you might be facing when it comes to software. But like Callum said, I think what strikes me, the point here, is that sometimes the best software won't always be accessible. You know, having worked, you know, in positions that where the software we sometimes use is not the most accessible, and we all admit it. And the support worker is where things come into play, and that option is there for that very reason, that not all working software can be made accessible. It would be nice for it to, and it should be. We would love to be in a society where everything's accessible. Unfortunately, I think that's a while away, but it's good to see that someone actually, you know, that employers can possibly mention the accessibility of their software, because I'd like to know what I might need to learn, or what I might need to spend more time training on, or whether I can, if I'm going really geeky, I can talk to someone to write JavaScripts for it if possible. You know, it's good to know these things beforehand, I think, because you can better prepare for potential things that you might be facing.
Well, there we are. Let us know what you think. How much information do you want about systems accessibility before and during your job application processes? And to what extent would you be willing to rely on a support worker to help you get the job done? It's a fascinating topic, and we're really keen to hear your thoughts. TechTalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum, Hubert, thank you very much. Stick around. It's another Tech Talk. You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Now, I don't know about you, as a blind person, I am very interested in how technology can help us recognise objects in our environment. And a new feature coming to the Be My Eyes app called Be My AI is going to do just that. But before we demonstrate the feature, which is going to be available to more testers from the 14th of August and then to everyone later this year, I just want to show you what we've got already to illustrate the difference between where we are and where we're going. So I'm going to start off by unlocking my phone and letting VoiceOver describe one of my photographs. So I'm just going to do that for you now.
Photos, favorites, back button, photo, favorite, date, the 12th of June, liftable subject available. Actions available, a brown dog with its mouth open.
Okay, so you can hear there, VoiceOver's describing the photo as a brown dog with his mouth open. That's good. That gives us an indication of what's in the picture. And we've had that ability now for a little while. But if I share this with the Seeing AI app, then Microsoft's free Seeing AI app will describe it. And you can do this today, so I'm just going to do that now.
Toolbar, share, button.
Go to share. And then
photo,
I just need
page
to
page three
scroll
with
to...
Recognize with Seeing AI.
Okay, cancel. We're now going to recognize with Seeing AI.
Scene, a dog standing in a blue container.
There we go. So we've got a little bit more information. We got told that there was a dog standing in a blue container. But what about if we recognize this with the new Be My AI feature currently in testing as part of the Be My Eyes app?
Page 4 of 4. Describe with Be My Eyes.
There we go.
Please wait. Be My AI is writing a message.
You just give it a second.
Be My AI, the picture shows a golden retriever dog standing in a backyard. The dog's face is blurred out, but its ears are fluffy and golden. The dog is wearing a collar with a tag. Behind the dog, there is a wooden fence and a large potted plant in a ceramic pot. The dog is standing in what appears to be a blue kiddie pool.
Amazing. So a lot more detail there about where the dog is. Now, they have changed this slightly. I think for privacy reasons, they're now blurring out faces and used to get a bit more detail about faces. So it'll be interesting to see how that conversation evolves, because personally, I quite like the detail about faces. And I think if you maybe agreed to some sort of privacy agreement, then perhaps there could be a way to make that happen. An earlier version of this described the dog as having kind eyes. So I really wish that was still there. But there you are. You can hear a lot of detail. The dog is standing in a blue kiddie pool, like a paddling pool, and there's a fence behind. And because this is using ChatGPT-4 to describe the image, we're able to ask follow-up questions. So let's do that now.
Message, text field, insert.
Tell me more about the fence.
Clear text, send message. Send message, please wait. Be My AI, please wait. Be My AI is writing a message. Be My AI, the fence in the background is made of wooden panels. It appears to be a typical backyard fence, with a weathered look. The color of the fence is a dark brown, and the panels are arranged vertically. The fence seems to be tall, providing privacy for the backyard.
So an incredible amount of detail there. So really looking forward to more people being able to test this. If you have the Be My Eyes app, you can join the waiting list as a tester. And of course, later this year, we are hoping that this feature will become available to everyone. So do let us know what you think, what tools are available to you for describing people and objects in your environment, what works well, what could be better. It's the usual email address if you'd like to get in touch, techtalk, that's T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K, at rnib.org.uk. I'm joined now by Hubert and Callum to just sort of talk about how else might we use a service like Be My AI when that becomes available. And obviously, there in the demo chaps, I had a picture of my wife's new guide dog. He was standing in a paddling pool in our backyard, you know, so a little bit of fun. But do you think there are any kind of productivity gains with a tool like this?
I mean, something that I do all the time is because we've all been in that situation where for whatever reason your screen reader stops talking, and you know, sometimes silence is the worst thing you can have as a blind person. And what I would sometimes do in that situation is get out CNAI and go onto that short text channel. If this is on my computer, obviously I will get out my phone, go to CNAI and point it at the screen, you know, and just say, because I mean, all right, I can't control the computer with seen AI, but it'll give me an idea of, okay, well, has the whole thing crashed? Are there any errors on the screen? Or is it, you know, what's going on?
Or it says something like installing update 3 of 27 or something, and you know, you can go make a coffee.
Yeah, so I can imagine being able to take a picture and then just literally ask it, you know, what's on my screen? Are there any errors on the screen? Or basically just say, here's a photo of my screen, what's going on?
Yes, and then, of course, with the AI, you can get more detail. And how about you, Hubert? Do you think there are productivity gains to be had? I'm thinking mainly even in a kind of a workplace setting using AI.
Well, I'd like to be able to do, and although I don't encounter this myself in a workplace often, it's good to take a picture of a document, for example, whether it's a screenshot, for example, of a page or an online article or even a printed page, and ask for specific information, being able to filter out information that you may not be able to easily find with a basic text scanning app. So be able to kind of take a picture of, for example, you know, a report, and you know you're looking for a specific section, ask to, you know, have that specific section read. We don't know how far you can stretch these things, but that is what would be nice to see, where you can, you know, find it easier to go through certain pieces of text to find just that bit you want, just by, for example, your voice or just by asking an AI. I think glimpses of that are already there. So it'd be interesting to see how far you can stretch that functionality and how far it can develop.
I guess the thing that concerns me a little bit is I don't want to let content publishers off the hook when it comes to creating accessible content. And clearly, there's lots of inaccessible content out there that AI is going to help us interrogate. But we must take a multi-pronged approach, I think, and continue to advocate for more structure and not overly relying on, you know, color and you know, using other forms of emphasis, making sure images are labeled properly and so on, because this stuff isn't bulletproof, is it?
No, absolutely not. And then, you know, we shouldn't rely on it. But then again, it's one of them occasions where we were talking about technology in the workplace earlier. You know, sometimes there might be something that's inaccessible, and for whatever reason, whether it's security or whether it's a legacy platform or whether the organization has no choice and, you know, your support worker isn't available, maybe, again, you know, just getting out of that situation that I was talking about earlier, like how I use it to see what's going on my screen if there's no sound for whatever reason, it could just help you out there. Same with social media. Obviously, we want people to use alt text and we should absolutely, definitely advocate for it. But then what about when the big new hot thing comes along, you know, for example, the next Threads, where there isn't the option of alt text? At least then we've got this to fall back on.
Yeah, it's another tool in the toolbox, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Something that I'm excited about as well is how much information this could have in the future. I mean, just to be clear, Be My AI doesn't use the internet, as far as I know. Like, it doesn't take the image and do some kind of internet searches with it, although correct me if I'm wrong on that, Dave, seeing as you've had access to this.
Well, it uses ChatGPT-4 in the background, so it's sending it off to ChatGPT to do the recognition, and then obviously all the the language model has been built from content, lots and lots of terabytes of data that have been harvested from all sorts of places is my understanding.
But something that I tried out with the Bing image search, and I wasn't expecting this to work, but I just tried it anyway. There's a couple of buttons on my dishwasher. I've had this dishwasher for about 3 years, and there's like a row of 5 buttons, physical buttons as well, luckily. No touchscreen. I don't know how we manage that. But there's 2 buttons where I've got no idea what they do. And I thought, out of interest, I wonder if I take a picture of the panel, could this image recognition tell me what the buttons are? And it got it wrong. So, it's not. And we've got to be fair, this is still early days of AI, even though it doesn't feel like it. But what I found impressive was it said, based on the image you sent me and the manual of what I think is your dishwasher from the image that you sent, these are the buttons. And I think it had got the model wrong. But what I found interesting was that it took that image, referenced it, tried to find what it thought was the model, and then found the manual, and then pulled out the button orientation and layout. It's just incredible stuff. And like I said, it wasn't accurate, but it's getting there. I mean, it can do that.
That is quite clever. It's what the potential is of that sort of feature. When you see it do that, you kind of think, if this is what it can do now, what can it do in a few versions' time, in a few years' time?
Yeah, I read a quote somewhere that they reckon GPT-7 will be written by GPT-6. you've reminded me, though, Callum Stoneman, a couple of weeks ago, you shared with us that you were getting a smart fridge. How's that panning out for you?
It's all right. Yeah,
it's not as cool as you were expecting.
No, not quite. Not the most accessible app.
I'm not sensing positivity here.
It is usable. But yeah, I've given a lot of feedback to the developers of the app. Let's just put it that way, about things that could be changed. And also, Dave, I got your terrible joke there. Not as cool as I was expecting.
Well, let us know. How do you think AI might impact your life? How might you use it? Will it make you more productive? Do let us know. The email address is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Hubert, Callum, thanks a lot.
The world's biggest arts festival is back in Edinburgh this month, and RNIB Connect Radio's Paulina has been finding out a bit more about the accessibility features we can expect.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. With Edinburgh Festival Fringe taking place from the 4th till 28th of August, we thought, let's find out what's accessibility like at the festival this year. And joining me now is Deputy Chief Executive of the Fringe, Lindsay Jackson. Lindsay, lovely speaking with you today.
And you. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. Now, the festival has been actually going on for a while now, but I feel like accessibility and accessible performances, maybe ones including audio description or live captions, are becoming a bit more prevalent when it comes to the festival.
Yeah, I think it is interesting to have seen the evolution of how people want to make their shows accessible, because we've definitely seen a growth across the board, whether captioned or BSL interpreted, audio described, relaxed, things that where people are making adaptations to their show to enable the widest possible audience to attend. That's grown exponentially since 2015. It is still, there's lots of work to do, and it's still a relatively small number considering the vast scale of the festival. But the offer is so much more diverse and interesting. And actually, I think we forget that those decisions are often driven by the artists themselves, who really want to make their work open to as many people as possible. So it's definitely in the last decade had a lot more attention and energy put into breaking down some of those barriers to taking part in the festival.
It is actually, as you said, it's up to the performer or the act to choose to make it accessible and choose how they're going to make it accessible.
Yes and no. So largely, it all depends on the venue that they're in, but ultimately, venues don't have the capacity or the funds to offer, blanket things like BSL interpretation or audio description or captioning. Some are working on things like on-demand captioning or handheld captioning and those sorts of things, but usually it's the company who will find the resources and the expertise to do that. So the venues will help and we will help try and matchmake where people have an interest in making these things happen. But the artist group themselves are the one who are making that proactive decision to make their show as accessible as possible.
And as you said, this year there is content that will be available with different accessibility features. Now, whether that is having that audio description or maybe having a venue that is wheelchair accessible. And I think we can find all of this information on your website.
Yeah, there's lots of different ways to find out information, and so for example, at the moment, if you went to ticketstartedfringe.com, you could search by audio described, and that would give you about 10 results. But actually, we expect to see that grow in coming weeks, because this is the point in the year where people really firm up those plans and make those decisions. And these things evolve as the festival happens. More and more companies and venues and organizers are responding to audience asks. So if an audience member gets in touch and says, "I'd love to attend this show, but is there any chance it could be audio described?" There's some lovely partnerships between like us and zoo venues and the Tron Theatre in Glasgow, where we have kit that people can borrow, and we have access to the software. So if they've got the capacity and they can find someone to help them with that, they can spin that up relatively quickly. So I'll focus on our website. You can search by all those features, but specifically for visually impaired and blind users, we will be turning on the Recite Me functionality, and I'm really interested to see how that works, and would love feedback from your listeners about if that does help navigate your way through the festival, and if it is a useful tool for us to have on our website, because we appreciate that we ourselves may not represent the groups of users that we're trying to help find their way through the festival.
Now that sounds really interesting. Would you mind telling us a little bit more about Recite Me? It's, as you said, is that a new feature this year?
So Recite Me is a, we've used various screen reader type functionality in the past, but have had feedback that it's not necessarily responsive and it doesn't necessarily allow users to toggle the things in and out that they need. So Recite Me is a toolbar, an accessibility software, and a user can add it to their device, and they can choose the things that they need to help make their experience more accessible. So that includes font sizes, colors. You can download text to audio. You can save that as PDFs or MP3s for later. So many of your users will probably be using this in lots of different ways. It's quite a widespread and universal dynamic accessibility software. We've never used it before, so we're quite keen to see how it works in our environment and how our audiences find using it on our website in order to get the information that they need. So all feedback, very much welcome from your listeners.
Oh, well, it will be lovely to hear how it all goes. And in regards to maybe we've decided we want to go and see a specific show, can we get any help obtaining accessible tickets?
Yes, of course. So we have and have always had a dedicated, we call them the access bookings team, but they're there really just to support anybody for who wants to book their tickets in a different way. So you can phone us, and all of this information's on our website, edfringe.com, but you can phone us, you can email us, you can talk to us via WhatsApp, we can do either text or voice messages, you can come and see us in person, and we're open at the moment Monday to Friday. By the end of July, we'll be open all day, every day. And you can come and talk to the team about facilitating finding certain shows that might be of interest to you, how you might book your tickets. You can access free personal assistant tickets if that's what you need. So we try and take a very human-centered approach to that, which is what works best for you and how can we communicate with one another in order to book you your shows in the quickest way possible so that you can just go out and enjoy the festival rather than spending lots of time waiting to talk to somebody from a box office. So give them a call. They're a very small but very brilliant team who just really want to be helpful.
Well, it all sounds absolutely fantastic. So, would you mind reminding us just one more time, when is the Fringe on in Edinburgh this year, of course, and what is that web address that we go to get the tickets, see what shows are on, and maybe give feedback as well?
So the Edinburgh Festival Fringe 2023 is from Friday the 4th of August to Monday the 28th of August. You can find out everything you need to know at edfringe.com and buy tickets at tickets.edfringe.com. And if you need us, then come and see us. If you're here during the festival, we're in the middle of the Royal Mile with the bright blue shop. But please just come and see us and tell us how your festival's going and ask us any questions. We're always here to help.
Well, it's been lovely catching up with you, and I hope the festival goes swimmingly this year.
Me too.
Lindsay Jackson, Deputy Chief Exec of Edinburgh Festival Fringe. Good luck preparing everything, and let's catch up again soon.
Absolutely. I'll see you around the festival.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
We've had an email from Rod Khan. Thank you very much for getting in touch with us, Rod. And Rod writes, "Hi, the demo of Apple TV was very good." Thank you very much, Rod. We appreciate that. But I think it's also worth mentioning that it's great to use with a Bluetooth keyboard. Well, Hubert's here. Hubert, would you agree with that?
That is actually a good point, to be honest. And it's one of these things where when I was reading the email, I kind of thought, yeah, I should have thought of that instead of kind of fighting with the Apple TV remote to try and type into a search field, flicking through all the keys. You can type it in on the phone screen as well, because there's a Apple TV remote section within the control center and it can bring up a keyboard. But what we have here is a good, very good idea. And I do have a Bluetooth keyboard, so I will have to try it with the Apple TV, because typing on the Apple TV is... it's doable, but it will take you a very long time. So it's one of these very obvious tricks, but certainly not something that everyone thinks of straight away, but very good recommendation.
Rod also tells us that Siri can help. He says that he can use it to turn on or off VoiceOver. So you just hold the side button, I guess, and say VoiceOver on, VoiceOver off, and that stops VoiceOver babbling, as it can sometimes do in the middle of your program.
That is true. And it happens a lot on the Apple TV, where sometimes it will randomly update you with the progress, but it depends. Different apps work differently with it, but VoiceOver can come in the way sometimes. And turning off audio ducking does help, because it then doesn't duck the audio of the program to talk over it. But yes, turning VoiceOver off is a good idea as well. You can either do it using Siri with the Siri button, or you can press the menu/back button, which is directly above the Siri button, three times to turn VoiceOver off as well.
Staying on the subject of TV, we've also heard from Gareth Williams, who says, following Hubert's piece on the Apple TV, I thought I would share my experiences with Samsung. I had downloaded the manuals and both the TV and remote guides, giving me an idea how I wanted things set up. The key to searching for programs available on the various apps is the Samsung SmartThings app. Are you familiar with this, gentlemen?
Yeah, I've used this before because, as I mentioned, or I think I've mentioned before, I've got a Samsung TV, just a small one in our bedroom, which we use sometimes if we're laying in bed and, you know, want to watch a film or something. The Samsung SmartThings app, interestingly as well, is the app that I use to control my washing machine. And I have seen that the TV is available in there. It's not something that I've really looked at up until we've seen this email, but you're absolutely right. This SmartThings app, because the accessibility with the washing machine is okay, but it's a little bit hit and miss. But you're absolutely right. It's a huge help with the TV.
Yeah, so you can use the SmartThings app to search for the programs, and the email says the app then shows on which platform the program is available. So sometimes more than one service will have the content that you want. And actually your choice on the phone should then put you on the correct screen on the TV to play your content, basically. So... clever stuff. Let us know if you've had the opportunity to play with that. We appreciate the tip, Gareth, and thank you very much for getting in touch. Now, we've also heard, finally, from Patrick in Preston. Preston, my old stomping ground. And Patrick writes, "Hi, Tech Talk team. Great show you put out as always. Was listening to the man from WhatsApp with great interest. But I was amazed to hear that he thought all things in the WhatsApp ship were fine." I don't know, was that quite what he said? But anyway, that was Patrick's perception. Patrick continues, "I get very frustrated with WhatsApp. It is extremely verbose and loses focus quite frequently." I wonder which platform you're using, Patrick, whether this is on Android or iOS, and whether there are some screen reader settings you could tweak. I do find with a lot of apps I need to turn off the screen recognition and image recognition for best performance. Anyway, Patrick continues and says, "With each person, I have to listen to whose name it is, then the telephone number, and then the message, and then we get the content of the message. And then only then do we get the content in detail of the photograph. I'm sure this could be streamlined." So you should definitely feed this back to WhatsApp, Patrick. I'm sure they'd be very keen to hear from you. Sometimes the best and the most effective way to do that is to actually post a review on the App Store or the Play Store, because whatever these folks tell you, they do read the reviews. What do you think, chaps?
Yeah, definitely. I've got to say, I agree with his email there. There is a lot of verbosity, especially in group chats, because I'm in a couple of groups where I want to keep informed of what's going on, but I don't necessarily want to save everyone to my contacts. And yeah, you do get, you know, every time it's like message from maybe John plus 447, you know, and then you get the full number. And then if it's to your point about the photos, I think in fairness, if you're talking about voiceover image descriptions, then yes, it does repeat itself. So when you hover over a photo, it will say photo from so-and-so, and then you get all the plus 447, and then you get the message that's with it. And then when VoiceOver gives you its description, it sometimes reads out, or quite often actually reads out, the number again, and then possibly even the message again before you get the photo description. But that's more of a VoiceOver problem than a WhatsApp problem. It's the way that VoiceOver's kind of interpreting the image. But yeah, I agree. I think it could be streamlined a little bit more. And I don't know if he said things were necessarily fine, but the one thing I will say, as someone who works in accessibility, it's different. The way you look at a product is different when you work with it compared to as a user. And I guess the point of that is that, for example, I work on the EE side of things for my company. So many people might be familiar with the mobile network EE here in the UK. And I would say that app is pretty accessible, but then someone else might use it and go, "That's not what you're talking about. There's this is unlabeled, there's this image, there's this, there's that." But sometimes when you work so closely with it, I think a big part of it is that you haven't seen what could have gone out. For me, yeah. You know,
if you could make the gift data button easier to find, Callum, I'd love you forever. Cheers, right.
I'll feed that back.
Patrick, thank you so much for getting in touch, and do let WhatsApp know. I think that's the thing, Callum, you know, let developers know, right?
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's like, that's a perfect example then. You know, you've said that about the gift data button, and you know, honestly, I'm gonna have a look at that, because we're testing so much and we're looking at so much. We've got different builds for production and pre-production, and then we're going back and forth, so things do get missed, you know, especially when the accessibility is such a small team. So yeah, feedback is crucial, 100%.
Thank you so much, Patrick, and everyone else who's contacted the programme, techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
It's now time for the next episode in our built-in screen reader series. Now, in episode 1 of the Narrator series, we looked at how to start and stop Narrator, we looked at Narrator Home, and also how to turn Narrator off. In episode 2, we will talk about input learning mode, the Narrator key, changing speech rate and volume, finding and opening apps, basic navigation, how to find out where you are, and date and time. One of the key things with using a computer with a screen reader is knowing the layout of your keyboard. And Narrator allows you to do this fairly quickly with input learning mode. Now, the simple way to explain it is that by turning this mode on, you can press any key on the keyboard and you will be told what its function is. So we will try this right now. I will enable it, and as this involves the Narrator key, I will tell you what that key is also. The Narrator key is a key on the keyboard you will use a lot to perform various screen reader related tasks, whether it's changing speech rate, changing volume, or hearing specific things about your computer or what's on the screen. And depending on which computer you are using or which keyboard, it will either be the caps lock key or the insert key if you are using a standard keyboard with a number pad. Now, in this case, we will find out which key it is. So I will press, for now, the input learning mode shortcut, and then we will try and learn the keyboard a bit.
Input learning on.
So I will now press a key, and we will see what it does.
Caps lock, Narrator key.
So I've just been told this is the Narrator key. I will press another key on the keyboard.
Control, Windows, Alt, Enter, up arrow, right arrow, left arrow, down arrow.
So as you can hear, I can press any key and be told what that key is, which is great if you want to familiarize yourself with the keyboard that you've got with your particular computer, as different keyboards and different computers might have some differences with keys on the keyboard. I will now turn input learning mode off.
One, input learning off.
Now, the next important thing when using a screen reader is making sure that we have the speech volume and the speech rate set correctly for us to be happy with when the screen reader speaks, and I will show you how to change these settings now. So first, we will look at volume. Now, the keys you will need for this is Narrator, which in this case is caps lock, Control, and plus or minus if you are using a number pad, or hyphen and equals if you are using a laptop keyboard, which, as I've said, you can use the input learning mode to identify. So I will press Narrator, Control, and minus.
Volume decreased to 95%.
There we go. Volume has decreased. I will now press Narrator key, Control, and in my case, equals.
Volume increased to 100%.
So volume is at 100. I'm happy with that. Now time for the speech rate. And this is a similar key combination, but without the control key. So it's Narrator key and plus or minus, depending on what keyboard you're using. In my case, it's hyphen and equals.
Speed decreased to 45%.
So that's decreased the speed. I'll press Narrator key and the equals key on my keyboard.
Speed increased to 50%.
And we've increased the speed. Now, the three things you need to remember about the basic screen reader navigation is, when it comes to Narrator, the tab key, the arrow keys, and the enter key. These keys you will probably be using quite a lot. The tab key will allow you to explore different elements of the screen. The arrow keys often allow you to read content, go through menu options, or help with web browsing and many other functions. And the enter key allows you to press buttons and open links and open messages in mail and many other functions also. Some of them we will explore in this series. Now, as I've told you this to keep in mind, the next task I'll show you is how to open an app on your computer. So on your computer, you have various apps that can do different things. This can be email, Microsoft Word to produce documents, or a web browser such as Google Chrome to help you use the internet. So I will show you how to quickly open an app from the Start menu by searching for it. What I will do here is open the Start menu by pressing the Windows key.
Start window, search, search box, edit, type here to search.
So it says type here to search, so we can search for an app. I'm going to type in Note for Notepad.
T-E, Note, Notepad, app, Press right to switch preview, 1 of 1 level 1, selected.
Now it said it's found Notepad, which is what we are looking for, so I'll press one of the previously mentioned important keys, the Enter key.
Untitled, Notepad window, text editor, editing.
So it has opened Notepad and it said text editor editing, which means that we are ready to type in whatever we wish to type. Now, if you want to find out where you are and remind yourself what you are doing, pressing narrator key plus the letter T is the shortcut you need. So I'll press narrator key, in my case caps lock, with the letter T. Here we go.
Untitled, Notepad window.
So it has told me where I am. And that way, I can tell whether I am in the right application or not. But say, for example, I want to see what other apps I have opened and switch between them. So I will hold down the Alt key and keep pressing the Tab key as the Alt key is held down, and I will be able to go through the apps that I have opened. Let's have a look.
Narrator podcast plan. Narrator, 3 of 8. Inbox, forward planning. Calendar Microsoft Teams, 6 of 8. 1 reminder, show prep document, untitled, Notepad.
So there you've heard a brief mention of what I have opened. Naturally, I'm not going to go through all the details of these things, but by pressing the Tab key while the Alt key is held down, I can easily go through the apps I have opened. Now, if I wanted to go into one of these apps, I can easily release the Alt and Tab keys, and the last spoken app will be focused on the screen. Now, one more little thing I will show you is how to be able to figure out the date and time, which can be quite useful if you need to track time because you are doing something important, for example, at work, or if you've got a meeting coming in. So, again, this will require the narrator key, which could be caps lock or insert, and the F12 key on your keyboard. So I'll press narrator F12.
10:41, August 3rd, 2023.
And now that has told me the date and time. So that is it for the second episode of the Narrator podcast series. We will be back with episode 3 very soon, where we will look at a feature called Narrator Scan Mode.
That's it from Tech Talk this time. Don't forget, of course, if you like what you heard, then do tell a friend. We always appreciate those shares and likes and recommendations. And don't forget, if you want to catch us when we first go to air, we're here on a Tuesday lunchtime from 1 p.m. UK on RNIB Connect Radio. And then again, Thursdays at 9 p.m. or that podcast drops each Friday. But from myself, Dave Williams and Callum Stoneman.
Bye-bye.
And Hubert Pavalkovich.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.